This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Thank you. right.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Hey, and good morning, and welcome to the Carol Cox Show again, another beautiful day here in Hawaii. I'm really excited. And we're going to try to talk about a subject that's interesting and dear to me in the first hour. And regarding solar and solar panels, and I'm sure a lot of you, like myself, are sitting debating should you get it, because you want to be committed to the environment and you want to do what's right and you want to save money and you want to make a wise investment or not. All of those things. So I've actually invited economist Thomas Laudet, and he's a former economist, and we're going to talk about the advantages and disadvantages and some of the rumors and others have had negative comments about it, and saying why you should not do solar and all of those things. And in the second hour, I'm going to have some folks in from down Waikiki. Well, you know the usual. Government comes, government does nothing. Imagine you rent a building, rent an office, buy space, put employees in, and one of the tenants is suspecting is using cyanide and acetone and all of that, and eventually dumping the waste products of that down the drain. And so you might definitely want to listen to the second hour as well as the first. So, Tom, good morning, and thank you for joining me. And if you could, give us a little background on yourself and tell us about this. Last week, on the 626 in the Star Advertiser of this year, you had an opinion piece there, and very extensive. Solar tax credits achieve multiple public and private goals.
Correct. That's right.
So tell us something about yourself, and go ahead and weigh in on some of these controversial issues and discussions that it's good for you, it's robbing the poor man, and.
Okay. Yeah, we can touch upon all those topics at some point. Background-wise, I have my doctorate in economics from University of Hawaii in 1980. I had academic positions for approximately 20 years thereafter, either teaching or research, and then most of that was at the University of Hawaii. My affiliation with UH ended in 99, and I started doing private consulting in Hawaii in 1978. Mm-hmm. And have continued to do so, and then exclusively after leaving the university. Mm-hmm. I've been doing it exclusively for the last 10, 15 years. So that's my educational backdrop. Most of my research is on impact analysis, such as the research that I did related to the Hawaii solar credits. Mm-hmm. And when I say impact analysis, what are the economic and fiscal impacts of this particular public policy? So I'll assess that. I mean, does it have a positive economic impact? Does it have a positive fiscal impact? Or is it negative, whatever it is? Mm-hmm. So why I got involved with this is because 15 years ago, the industry asked me to look at that very fact, because at that time, the legislature was looking at eliminating the solar credit, and the industry wanted to know, okay, is it as bad as it's being made out to be? Well, it isn't. And in fact, it's positive. It was positive then, and it's even more positive now in terms of the economic and fiscal impact because of the price of oil. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my research is in that particular area, not necessarily related to energy, but other agricultural and resource economic areas as well.
Now, you in the article, you said that a solar system is an individually owned and operated distributed power plant that substitutes for a centralized power plant.
That's correct.
Let's talk about that a bit. Which is the individual buys, and they then owns their own productivity.
typically, because it can be leased, someone can install the system. A lot of these programs have come into existence to facilitate the uptake of solar systems. And individual investors will pool their money and create a lease program because they'll get a tax benefit. They take the tax benefit of the credit, but then you as the individual end user get the use of the system, and usually, generally, at a cost of electricity less than what you would pay the utility. And then at some point in time, the system reverts to you well before the end of its useful life. Mm-hmm. So, I believe most systems are yet installed by individual households who, and then the individuals in those households take the credit. And the credit is, it's a dollar-for-dollar reduction of your tax liability. So the credit, this is the way it historically operated. Now it's changed a little bit because you can take a rebate that has a lower value, but then you get cash back from the state for an installation. But typically, if you have a tax liability, the credit is 35% up to a cap for a solar electric system, for example, of $5,000. So if you put in a $10,000 system, the state, that will thereby reduce your tax liability with the state by 35%.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a $10,000 tax liability, it's $3,500 less because the credit is a dollar-for-dollar reduction in your tax liability to the state. At the federal level, it's a 30% credit with no cap on it. So it's 30% of the full value of the system.
Mm-hmm.
So the way the credit works is it just reduces your tax liability, and a dollar in your pocket is a dollar in your pocket. And those subsidies significantly improve the economic performance of the investment. And I want to underscore the term investment, because a solar system expenditure is not like a consumer expenditure. It's not like filling your car with gas and it burns up and you got to fill it again. Purchase of a solar system by virtue of the credit is it's an investment in a energy generating system that has a life of 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the year you put it in, this is a very important point, because there's some confusion amongst economists who've been writing critical comments about this.
Uh-huh.
They go, well, how can you have a positive fiscal effect if you're saying that happens in year one when the cost of the installation and you're taking money away from the state would otherwise be spent in some other fashion? Probably it's a zero-sum game at best. Well, but that's a short-sighted point of view, because if you take just the year of the installation as the economic and fiscal impact of the credit, you're ignoring the fact that the individual who put the system in has a return for 30 years. And what the system does, okay, first of all, as you said, the system is a power plant. It takes free sunshine and converts it into electricity, mm-hmm. as opposed to burning fossil fuel. So for me, as an individual, I'm no longer paying to burn that fossil fuel for my electricity. Additionally, I'm not having to pay someone else because I put in a power plant. I'm generating my own electricity. So you get a double impact by virtue of installing the system.
Mm-hmm.
No more dollars, and from a broader economic perspective, those dollars that would otherwise leave the state to purchase that fossil fuel, now they're in my pocket, and I don't have to use them to purchase any other electricity because now I'm generating my own.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do with those dollars if I'm a local household? I spend them. So that savings starts reverberating through the economy, or I accumulate wealth. So essentially, if I spend it, it stimulates, not only do I get the benefit of those expenditures, but it stimulates economic activity via the multiplier impacts.
Mm-hmm.
If it's accumulated as wealth, well, it's a wealth transfer from fossil fuel companies, oil companies, to individual households, which in my mind is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're wealthy enough. How about more wealth for the basic households in Hawaii or anybody installing a solar system anywhere? So it's very important to understand that the solar system substitutes free sunlight. They haven't taxed it yet. It's totally free.
Yet,
exactly. for fossil fuels. And that's what it is. And so a lot of the commentary that I've heard loses sight of the fact that the benefits of the installation of a solar system go on for 30 years. And that's wherein the significant economic and fiscal benefits come in, is because it keeps on giving for 30 years.
Is there a basic equation that a homeowner or private party can rely on, or that would enable them to decide what size, how many panels, or if they should or shouldn't? Can you share that rather than having a salesman do that? Is there any way you could share or give some insight to the listeners out there that may be on the edge of getting it? And
sure. I mean, typically what happens is you will have, whether it's a salesman or one of the tech piece individuals from one of the companies, comes in and sizes up your electricity needs. Or and also, this could be solar hot water as well. So there's solar electric and solar hot water. And the solar hot water, it doesn't generate electricity directly, but it substitutes free sunshine to heat your water, as opposed to, again, burning a fossil fuel to use the electricity or the gas to make the hot water. But they come in, size your system. They'll look at your electric bill and say, here's your energy needs. And typically, they don't attempt to wipe out your electricity bill completely. It's more sizing a system, and hopefully it'll be grid-tied, that covers most of your energy needs. But when the sun's not shining, and if you're grid-tied, which you really want to be unless you're going to have a backup storage system, then you use the grid electricity. And just the same, because I'm talking about the grid. In other words, you're still connected to the utility.
Right.
But another misconception that I hear out there is, oh, the, and let's clarify it right now, we're talking story, is, oh, we're losing people on the grid because they're putting in solar. Well, no. I mean, show me the data. As I always say, show me the money. Show me the money. Because if you look at the data published in the data book, you see the number of customers tied to the grid, the HECO customers, have gone up. And people who install solar typically don't leave the grid. They're still grid tied. So they're still on. If I don't, even if I generate in the summer on my solar electric system, I don't need to use any electricity from HECO. I still pay something because I'm grid tied.
Right.
You still have a monthly fee. Now, I'm not using electricity, but I still have a monthly fee. I'm still grid tied. So there's a misconception out there that once you put in solar, oh, now I've left the grid. Everybody has to now increase their cost on a per unit basis because I'm off the grid, because I'm no longer there. This is simply not true.
Would it be fair to suspect or assume that someone is using that as a tactic to mislead?
Well, my having reviewed the commentaries in the Star Advertiser and the fact that they're not fact-based, it's just a lot of arm-waving, in my opinion, suggests there's some alternative agenda.
Right.
Yeah, it's a cover for something. I don't know how else to explain it. Maybe there's good reasons for it. But a lot of the statements made just don't add up, like the poor versus rich. And then I was just alluding to that.
Right.
That when I leave the grid, I'm a rich guy, and now the poor who left on the grid have to subsidize me leaving the grid. In fact, they have to subsidize the credit because they don't get the benefit of it. Well, that's bogus. No, whoever made that comment did not do any research into who is taking the credit. And the fact that they use the poor versus rich language tells me that there's some political charge there. Because if you're an academic or you're a professional economist, you don't couch your terminology when you're talking about income groups and poor versus rich. It's lower income, middle income, and upper income. So when you use poor versus rich language, it's it, in my mind, it's politically charged. Why are you doing that? Well, you want to charge somebody.
Right.
You want to get them fired up that this is a bad thing. But the fact of the matter is, from the last data that I looked at collected by taxation, it was the reverse. More people in the lower income groups are taking the credit than the upper income groups. And they take proportionately more of the total credit expended relative to the taxes that they pay. They pay proportionately less in taxes than the proportion of the credit amount, dollars that they take of the total amount paid, than the rich folk. than the upper income groups. Okay. So I mean, this misinformation is out there. And hey, if you're going to step up to the plate as a professional, have mm-hmm. your facts straight. Otherwise, shut up. I'm sorry.
It seems no one burdens them with providing the facts. I'm approached quite often. Oh, you should install solar, or I should come on the show and we should pitch some solar sales. But, you know, and no, I can't do that because I don't sell for you. I don't sell my listeners. I try to present facts and information. Then they go by and do their own thing. But does the state lose, in your op-ed, you talked about this. Does the state lose $70 million by funding the credit lending?
Okay.
And explain, is that a bogus charge or is it misleading or was there some undercurrent?
It's misleading for the reason I just said. First of all, there may be and may be, mm-hmm. that's just a number thrown out there. It's an estimate. It hasn't occurred yet, but it could because of the number of installs and particularly large installs going in.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the bigger picture. The complete picture. The state may expend $70 million on the credit the year that credit is taken and those systems are installed. But to say that expenditure is over and done and next year you have to pay another $70 million to get the same benefit, that's where the bogus nature of it comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, the reason for that is because it stimulates an investment in something that goes on for 30 years and gives back for 30 years. So when you say $70 million, you're only talking about the cost in that particular year. You're not looking at the life cycle benefits of the system that was stimulated and installed
uh-huh.
by virtue of the credit. So it's just a half-baked analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And again, because, and I say this, if they had done their homework, and you're talking as a professional, you would know that, and it would be factored into the statement that you
mm-hmm.
made.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I again go back to there's some political charge related to a lot of this negative commentary. And I'm glad to be set straight on that there's no political charge, but I haven't been to date.
So this is an invitation to
correct.
Put up or shut up. Is that can we describe it?
That's one way of stating it.
Well, that's you know, one of the other issues is that not an issue. You applauded or complimented the legislators,
correct,
for doing this. What is it that caused you to believe that they did a good job, or what are the benefits, or what's special about their efforts this year?
Well, they got it when there was pressure on removing the credit, and the argument typically is, oh, it's that industry doesn't need it anymore. Well, first of all, that's a misconception. The industry doesn't get the credit. The households get the credit. Arguably, the most basic economic unit mm-hmm. in society gets the credit. And then they use it, and it trickles up through the system via installing the solar system.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought with that interjection.
No problem. Your solar panel went out.
Oh, the legislature, right. Well, I mean, they got it. I mean, when these issues came up, and the perspective was, oh, look, we're spending all this money, we're not getting anything in return. Well, when I assessed it, I said, well, that's not necessarily true. You have to look at a solar system as an investment in a power plant that gives back for the life of that system.
Mm-hmm.
When you consider that in the substituting of free, locally produced sunshine for imported fossil fuels, the story changes. They got it.
Mm-hmm.
The anti-solar crowd that I've been referring to didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And by virtue of the legislators getting that, they supported the credit, and it has been a rip-snorting success, not only for individual households, but for state policy goals.
Now, I'm not familiar with the specific details, but the detractors have about solar have spoken, but have they offered anything to enhance? You know, they tell us that it's broken, this process is broken. What did they do, or what have they offered as solutions to address their concerns?
Oh, take the credit away. And again,
take what? Then isn't that robbing the public of an incentive?
Well, it is. And the aside from the fact that there's stated public policy goals related to clean energy, you're going to diminish the state's ability to achieve those goals and achieve a higher percentage of total energy generation from renewables. You're taking away from households.
Yeah. Isn't it standard practice for government to try and stimulate by whether it's buying the newfangled washer-dryer, the low energy, they give you rewards too, isn't it?
Correct.
So why would they abandon this and object to this approach? Is it
political reasons? The only thing I can come up with. When you look at that as a net benefit to the state from a fiscal perspective, that is, more taxes come in than that they pay out in expenditures over the life of these systems, then the reason to diminish it is political, because the arguments that have been made don't hold water when you look at the big picture. So I can only assume it's some political charge.
Well, accepting these facts that, one, we're dependent, this island nation, state nation, is dependent upon solar or on fossil fuel. While the detractors may have objections and think that it's wrong, they should be scurrying to get something right if they're going to object to what is being proposed.
Well, I think maybe implicit in their argument is, well, they don't need it anymore. And the level of system uptake will be the same if there's a credit or not. Simply untrue. And then any economist can tell you if you raise the cost of something, the demand goes down.
Mm-hmm.
You take the credits away, the cost to the end user goes up, and less is demanded, unless you've got an unusual situation, call it that.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, this was a market signal, that these credit sends a market signal to the end user that this is a public policy, and we, the government, want to stimulate this for overall public benefit to the state, call it that, because that's their perception of the leaders of the state. So you diminish, you take that market signal away, and then the number of systems installed goes down. So it's not like you take the credit away and everything remains the same. No, it doesn't. And I've looked at the long-term relationship between the level of the credit and the number of systems, system uptake. And the higher the credit, the more systems get installed.
Mm-hmm.
So if it is implicit in the argument of these anti-solar individuals, you take it away and everything's going to be the same. It's just wrong.
Anti-solar individuals, let's follow the money. And just speculation on my part. Who would benefit? Well, HECO would still benefit if the word went out that it's going to take everybody off the grid and the poor people are going to have to continue to pay. Well, they would benefit. But what about the oil companies? They stand who sell and who know that our entire economy, every light pretty much is relying on fossil fuel. So the sellers of fossil fuel would probably be eager to, and I'm not saying, I don't have any proof that they were, but I'm speculating, and I have that right to say that if anything, if I was following the money, I would want to find out who has the motives, who has the incentive, and who would benefit directly.
Well, obviously there's an economic benefit. If you're selling more of your product, there's an economic benefit to you.
Mm-hmm.
But the – and I don't know. I don't know who's involved, who's stimulating these anti-solar comments.
We know anti-solar comments are out there. So, we just try and put a name and a tail on it.
Well, I don't know whose position or perspective they're representing.
Right.
All I know is the facts don't hold water and what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then just because of the politically charged language as well – suggest to me that there's a political charge in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I got to state there are some arguments being made and statements being made that my understanding, although I haven't immersed in this and looking at this in detail, but there are some technical issues.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, like with respect to the utility, there's a saturation point that's been established at 15% solar or renewables on the system. And understand, solar is non-firm power. It only produces when there's sunshine. So once it goes down, the grid can't depend on solar. Once the sun goes down, the grid can't depend on solar to generate electricity. So they have to, the utility has to have enough generating capacity to fill in when the sun doesn't shine anymore. And there is a level at which they'll reach where there become some technical issues that have to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how they're addressed and whether there can be some technological innovations to increase that saturation point, those are issues I haven't investigated, but it's all out there. And the same thing on the fossil fuel for the refineries here. They're still very profitable, but if they stop processing and refining, there's going to be some scale losses, diseconomies of scale, which you say in economic jargon. Mm-hmm. Their cost per unit of production may go up because they're processing less fuel. So there are some other issues out there. Whether we've reached those points, I don't know because I haven't looked at that.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes sense that at some point they have to be addressed.
When you look at, there's the requirement to actually use palm oil or substitute fossil. So when you take that percentage, throw into the pictures, you can see the fossil fuelers might be concerned and be motivated.
Sure.
I mean, that's fair for me to say. I'm not asking or soliciting an input or opinion from you. It's just that's my opinion and how I see it, and trying to get to who would be willing to come out and make statements to detract from, we need solar power, we need wind power, we need all of those natural, even wave if it's done right. So when I read the comments saying it's the public, what was that? Was one of them was zero
public benefit?
Can you zero public benefit? I'm sorry. Yes, it is. The initial investment is high, but how can you tell a person who is concerned when you multiply it by 400,000 that not smelling dirty air,
correct,
is not a benefit? See, they're thinking dollars and cents. And I'm thinking, what makes sense?
Correct. Yeah. Well, zero public benefit, and related to that is, the whole poor subsidizing the rich thing.
Yeah.
And for what? For nothing. There's no public benefit from the expenditure.
Yeah.
And it's just simply not the case.
Yeah, I stand back from an environmental standpoint looking, if there's less demand on the power plant to generate electricity, that means we don't have the tower spewing soot with mercury and all the other contaminants, constituents found in. That in itself is a public benefit.
Correct.
You know, and so when they say that, I'm like... By the way, we just, a friend introduced me to you.
Right.
Jan Weinberg.
Right.
So that's, and this was, had nothing to do with this, just a coincidence that you showed up in the paper. And
right.
We'll talk about that later. I thought I was going to be first. No.
Sorry about that.
No. But it's good, and I enjoyed reading that. And again, you should go and try and get this article again at Star Advertiser. Which is, if you got internet, 626-12. Got some pretty interesting comments. But again, you have more things to talk about it, and feel free to...
Well, just on this public, no public benefit, when I wrote this article,
mm-hmm.
I really talked about this. They said public expenditures for private benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And so here again, there's when I look at this, it's a public expenditure, and it does have a private benefit aside from achieving public policy goals, whether you disagree with them or not, or agree with them or disagree with them. You still are achieving some, and they've been deemed worthwhile to achieve, such as the clean air.
Right.
But the argument that, it's a public expenditure for a private benefit. Well, when you say that, I go, well, can you tell me a public expenditure that doesn't result in some private benefit?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Education. Well, I got my education at UH. It was largely subsidized. Mm-hmm. I'm not paying taxes, and they're not getting from the private benefit that I got. There's no public benefit in return. The roads, if I pay my taxes, it's a public expenditure to put in that road, and I drive and generate income, which is subsequently taxed.
Right.
There's no private benefit.
Right.
So, I mean, just to make the statement again, I mean, you haven't thought it through at all. You mm-hmm. just, it's a statement that says you really don't like this for mm-hmm. political reasons again.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there's enormous public benefits from an installation of solar. First, the private benefit that accrues to me by virtue of installing it, that is a private benefit because I get the tax savings dollars.
Mm-hmm.
But then therein, for 30 years, I have an increase in my wealth or I'm increasing my expenditures, mm-hmm. which reverberate through the economy, and when they do, they're taxed. So there's a public benefit resulting from the public expenditure that led to a private benefit.
Right. And you got your dandruff up here in this comment. It seems you didn't just write an article. You had instance after instance, example, and then you even spoke about the tourists as an example to draw a parallel.
Sure.
Tourism, if we're losing it. Well, I'll let you. You're in living color here. You tell us.
Sure. I mean, okay, if you're going to say no public expenditure for private benefit, well, stop paying anything for the tourist industry. First and foremost, it's a very mature industry. Solar is not. It's not as mature as the hotel industry, for example.
Right.
But if you're going to say that, well, eliminate any public expenditure where there's a perceived private benefit that you don't like.
Mm-hmm.
So take away the Hawaii Tourist Authority, mm-hmm. $80 million per year.
Mm-hmm.
That's more than the $70 million that they're paying for the solar credit.
Right.
I mean, let's be consistent. Otherwise, you're being hypocritical.
Or let's run over the Colleen and get that $75
million. There you go. There you go.
When I read that, I thought, okay, this is going to be a pleasure talking with him and having him because – well, everybody seems that the stream is flowing, and everybody says, let me go dip my toe in it. Oh, I've fallen in. Let me just flow along with it. And I read yours. Wait, this guy.
Well, I mean, you know, I've looked at it closely. I've looked at the data, and what I'm stating is based on analysis, based on the best data available that I had at the time. And what aggravates me about these arm-waving comments is they're just politically charged comments. And I don't mind that,
mm-hmm.
but state at the beginning, this is a political opinion.
Right.
This is an opinion, not mm-hmm. factually based, but it's my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
No problem then. But when you present it as, I'm an authority, I'm stating facts, and they're not, well, then I have issues.
Now, I'm sure there's someone out there have a desire to find more about your ideas. And how would one contact you, or where do you give talks, or are you published in other places, or
I don't. I when invited, like onto your show, I do it. Other than that, I'm busy with all my stuff, and I don't. Any public forum that I invited to do, I do.
Okay.
But I don't have any regular anything.
Okay. Well, what we'll do is pin your tail down. So you can come back and when because this state needs to focus and sort through the nonsense and all, and we need to arrive at a level where we have incorporated solar, incorporated all of the other natural sources of natural powers, right?
The renewables. And mm-hmm. so you're not going to – and they don't have – like me using sunshine to generate electricity, I'm not aware of any negative externalities.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, no negative side effects from that.
Sounds like somebody have a – good morning, caller. You have a comment, a question for Tom and myself?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, Bob.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sir, you know, why can't the state be forced to do this alternative energy stuff? I mean, how can the people tell the state, invest your money in something that's long-term? And how can these politicians understand that we're just throwing money down a rat hole with these paying the oil to the, you know, to the Middle East and, you know, Indonesia, wherever we get our oil from?
Indonesia.
but the bottom line is, we have all the resources. We have the wind, we have the solar, we have the waves. We've got every recourse, you know, to get energy for an investment, like you were saying. but the investment pays off. You know,
it does, but there's some what economists term institutional constraints and infrastructure constraints. You just can't readily convert from a fossil fuel-based system to a renewable energy-based system. And then you have the issue on a lot of the renewables. They're not firm power. If the wind stops blowing, the sun stops shining, and you still want your grid up and to be able to watch TV at night or when there's no wind.
Yeah, I understand all that, you know, the supply thing, right? The supply thing always worries that, well, at certain times you don't have this and that. But, you know, just do an array of batteries. Just go for the long term. You say, well, we store energy on the side for when it doesn't blow wind and it doesn't sunshine and there's no rays. You know, that's pretty radical. You will have one of them sources. But see, the bottom, you know, in the paper about a month ago, it showed all the years that we've, the billions of dollars that we've been throwing away in our oil costs, you know, that we've been paying out, leaving the island. And it's just, you add them all up, it's just a tremendous amount of money that just sieves right through our hands. And all that money could be recirculating here in the islands. We'd be a pretty prosperous place if we didn't have to, you know, because we got all these tourists dropping money here every day. You mean like it was water on us.
Right.
And if we can't turn that money into something that's concrete and, you know, like an energy source, it just doesn't make any sense here. I applaud doing so.
Well, I agree with you. In that, if Hawaii is rich in renewable energy sources, and if they can, you can either store the power, which, and if there's some huge breakthrough in storage technology, that would be awesome. That it's not, I'm not aware of anything on the horizon, although there's a lot of research being done. Mm-hmm. Or you have a mix of renewables. A significant cross-section of which are firm power. They're always producing, like geothermal, for example.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You bring it up. Because really, in reality, they say on Maui, you just got to go down 1,000 feet, even, and you get hot, you know, hot earth.
Right.
You get to hear on this island, too. They just say, hey, we're going to do this. And like you said, the geothermal is for, you know, as long as we're going to be living here, you know, to this island, it's always going to be hot underneath. So, like you're saying, and that's a source that doesn't have no downtime. I mean, no matter what happens, you're always going to get the geothermal.
Well, right. Bob, always remember, if there's a hell below, we're all going to go. We don't get this right, you know.
It means we could use hell for some benefit, however.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Bob, for your call.
You guys have a good day. And like you were saying, sir, anything on this, you know, venue of getting our own energy is going to make the whole island richer.
Absolutely. Definitely. That's totally correct.
You guys have a good day. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I got a question for you. It's somewhat related but off the subject. Let's say we're successful in weaning ourselves, we, the United States, weaning ourselves off the oil from Indonesia and the likes thereof. Are we doing any good because we now leave them vulnerable to developing nations and China, who will move in and get it cheaper and less competition, and they don't have the environmental concerns that we have, that they've incorporated in nations like Korea, who's on the rise. Are we creating any monster down the road? I'm not saying that we should not wean ourselves, but while you're here, I wanted to ask, you're an economist, is there any thought given to that?
First of all, if you substitute renewables for fossil fuels, mm-hmm. you're thereby lowering the demand for fossil fuels. Mm-hmm. So the price, all of the things remaining the same, mm-hmm. goes down.
Right.
So then it becomes cheaper for others to use fossil fuels. Now, it's going to go down. Certain things will happen. It's not going to go down dramatically, mm-hmm. Because what happens as the oil price ratchets down, marginal producers can no longer produce profitably.
Okay.
So, in other words, the guys producing at $100 a barrel right now aren't making money. They're hoping for a price for oil above $100 a barrel that makes them profitable. And so you go down. As it hits $90, anybody producing for more than $90 a barrel, they're not making money. They're going to go off production as well. Mm-hmm. So you're going to ratchet down. And as they go off, stop producing, well, then you have, on the supply side, a reduction in supply, which leads to higher prices.
Higher prices.
So it's going to balance out in some fashion like that. And I don't know where the equilibrium would be. You know, I've read some stuff, and I think it's like around $80 a barrel. A lot of these fracking operations in the oil sands in Canada, I think their point of profitability is around $80, and those are huge resources. Mm-hmm. So as long as the price of oil is thereabouts or slightly above, they can profitably, or at least cover their costs for the production of the fossil fuel.
Now, there is a reason why you're called the economist and I'm not. But I've often thought about that, and I don't have the background and the knowledge to think about the equilibriums or if there is. But I am concerned, you know, that – but I guess things play themselves out naturally, eventually. Nature seeks to have a balance, right, equilibrium?
Typically.
Yeah.
And so do human systems, like an economic system.
Mm-hmm.
And that said, when you start tweaking a market, you distort the equilibrium that would otherwise be the case in that particular market. And I want to interject, related to that, that you know, there's these criticisms, oh, we shouldn't be subsidizing solar because they don't need it anymore. Well, what about the bloody oil industry?
Yeah,
I mean, it's a factor of 10. I think it's $70+ billion a year in subsidies to the oil industry. A very mature industry. It's only been around 100 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
We're still subsidizing it. Why? Okay, why?
Like I say, follow the money, man.
Follow the money.
We're now getting close to the...
Exactly. Now take the subsidies away. Mm-hmm. And take them away from solar. Hey, great. The analysis that I've seen is, well, the U.S. would be 100% solar. Because then, and especially if you then, in economic jargon, you internalize the costs of burning fossil fuel. You know we're going to have to try to mitigate the CO2 emissions. Or when you burn fossil fuel, start paying the cost of mitigating the CO2 being deposited in the environment, into the atmosphere. Start covering the healthcare costs that are incurred when you burn fossil fuels, and you alluded to them earlier. Mm-hmm. Internalize all those costs into the use, into the market cost or market price for fossil fuels. Then on a per unit basis to generate electricity, again, the analysis is that I've seen, fossil fuel energy generation would be more expensive than renewables. Mm-hmm. So let's level the playing field. You don't like the markets being distorted.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then get the government out altogether and then see how the dust settles. We're not going to see that. So when you cry about a pittance of a subsidy for the solar industry, I'm going, well, let's not be hypocritical here. Let's be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Get rid of those subsidies for the oil industry.
Well, anyway, if there's anyone out there that has comments that they'd like to come on board and talk about, I'll give you fair play. But, again, with your – you've written about it and quite healthy, the information, the contents of that article, and I was pleased to see that it was written that, because I've often had these issues, and what economist is going to sit down and talk to you openly without having, just basically having the time to do it? You know?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk story, and I do want to thank the advertiser, Star Advertiser, for publishing the article, because they didn't have to.
Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
I think with the 4th of July around the corner and all this talk about oil, I think the most patriotic thing we can do is to eat organic food, because it's part of an agricultural system where they don't use any petroleum-based fertilizers or petroleum-based pesticides. And, again, that will cut down on much of our oil imports if we eat organic. And I think it's the patriotic thing to do with the 4th of July a couple of days away.
I don't disagree with that. I think it's healthier food, too.
Yeah. I just wish more people, the organic people, would start advertising and come knocking on the door. Look, get on the show or something.
But they're not multinational corporations with huge advertising budgets.
Yeah, but
they can
pick up the phone and come there. We give it away for free.
Yeah.
But, yeah, thank you, caller. Any other comment?
Have a nice 4th of July. God bless America.
All right,
thank
brother.
You.
Aloha.
Yeah. Aloha.
Well, that's right. We get reminded where we are. That's what's really nice. You
yeah,
know?
Really. That's true.
Yeah, but anyway, any other comments? We're coming down on the closing of this.
No. That's anything else that I would want to comment on?
Well, you seem to be upset about not upset. I'm just taking the liberty of describe. You talk about the approved drilling. We were going to be. You said on your way driving in, you heard.
Oh yeah, I mean, Michelle,
you look pained.
Well, you know, the ecosystem in the Arctic is very fragile, and Shell is now drilling off the north slope on some, is it a deep water well or something similar? I think it is a deep water well.
Mm-hmm.
And the commentary was, well, they are making preparations to deal with a BP type of blowout up there. But I have a good buddy that fishes salmon in the Bering Sea, and I hear stories about the conditions up there. I mean, you honestly think that you're going to contain an oil spill with the radical conditions there? And if it spills, that's a very, very fragile ecosystem.
And getting to and imagine what world impact it would have, because that pond, that portion of the earth, feeds a lot of people around the world.
It does.
And imagine what it would, the economical impact.
Yeah.
Whereas right here, every place has a buffet with crab that attracts the tourists. I don't think they'll be wanting to eat crab if we had a BP disaster or similar one.
Yeah, well.
From that area.
Correct.
Then they wouldn't have it anywhere. I cringe when I hear them talk about just for those impacts, the environmental and the economical.
I agree.
Well, anyway, Tom, I appreciate you dropping in, and anytime, if you got other points, and call up and share with us, because keep us educated. That way we save money, and buying solar or anything of this is a major investment, and we need to know, because you get a salesman come along and sell it to you.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're going to purchase, I would, you know, say get a couple quotes. I had a friend, my swimming buddy, and I said, get alternative quotes, and he talked. He's retired. He talked to six different people,
mm-hmm.
and finally he got a really good installed cost per watt.
Mm-hmm.
That was excellent. So, because he took the time to talk to different people and find out about the different systems, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
and I'm happy to say that the panels that he is using are made in the U.S.
Okay.
Because there's a whole other issue related to China subsidizing the solar industry.
That's right. China, I was told that they have, there's a lot of companies that uses foreign materials.
Yeah, no problem with that. It's just level the playing field. If you're
right.
going to subsidize it and these guys aren't subsidized, well, then that's an unfair competitive advantage.
Yeah. Well, Tom, thank you, and see you again.
I hope so. Thank you, Carol.
Alrighty. That was Mr. Tom Loudett, and economist and former economist with UH. And join us in the next hour, and we're going to be talking about the Eaton Square matter with cyanide and all the other things and government failure to do what's right. And again, this is consistent with what we've always been talking here. We need good government to do good things. So we'll see you shortly.
Thank you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show, right here at KWAI. Time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Alrighty. Good morning and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, the second half. As I told you, I would have a guest, Mr. Don Pearson. Persons. And though he's one person, but an important person today, Don is coming from he's a realtor, and I'll let him give his all of his titles and all, but an interesting development over at the Eaton Square. And as I told you, let me just try and lay a little foundation for you here. Imagine you own a business, and you share the same common areas, or someone rents a building on top of you, a buy or whatever. Their activities conflict with yours or causes harm to you or your workers or what have you. And you reach out, and obviously in a civil world here, in a civilized world, we have government agencies and entities that are supposed to come in and regulate these things, first to prevent them and give good guidance. No, there's no perfect world, but at least with government agencies and regulatory bodies, they set certain conditions and you're to operate by them. But what happens when the government agency failed to detect or enforce or monitor or regulate an entity, and that entity's activities impact you, causing your employees to be sick and cause you to shut down your business and things of that nature? And then you discover the reason is you suspect that they're using cyanide and other chemicals and all of that and dumping them down the drain and corroding the drain and then causing you financial harm and physical harm. So you call the state, and the state comes, and you call the city, and the city comes, and they basically go through the motions and then leave you standing with a humongous issue, both legally, financially, and it could be career-destroying, life-destroying. So that's what we're going to be talking about here, and specifically the states and the city and county of Honolulu's, and the EPA, by the way, failure to do anything. And so hold on to your seats. If this is going to be a bumpy ride, because I'm sure all of you will probably know that you've heard some of the story we've talked about in the past. But this one, on my scale, tops them all. The government was there, and the problem is still there, and the government did absolutely nothing. So, Don, good morning, and thank you for joining me. Can you give us a little background on yourself and the listeners? Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you for allowing me to come down here today and helping with this on this issue. If it wasn't for people like you, people like us, we just kind of lost out there because we've struggled to do things and haven't gotten anywhere. But a little background about myself. Again, my name is Don Persons, and I own a couple of real estate companies here in town. And one of them is called Waikiki Real Estate, and that's down at Eaton Square Shopping Center down at Hobron Lane.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been in Hawaii about 35 years. I chose to live in Hawaii. This is where I always wanted to live, and so this was my choice. I bought the location about 7 years ago when the Scheidler Group condominiumized the shopping center, and I sat in line for 19 hours to buy a particular space because I thought it would be an ideal space for, in the future, to open up a second real estate company.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of years ago, we opened up a real estate company on the street down there. And when I first bought the space, we formed a board of directors down there, and I've been the president of the board of directors from day one. I've always volunteered my time. I've really believed in the location. I've believed in the shopping center. I've also been on the board of directors on the residential tower from day one. I've just really put my heart and soul in this place.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago, after my tenants that I inherited left, I went ahead and built out the real estate company and brought in some people to run that company, as I have the principal broker at another company, and so I have to stay at the company where I work at.
Mm-hmm.
But I am the president of, I'm the owner, and again, I am the president of the shopping center. About 18 months ago, some of the people working down there started coming to me and saying they're getting headaches, they're not sure what's going on. And we tried to figure out, you know, what was causing these issues, the eye burning, the rashes, things like that. Then we started to get leaks from above, from the drain lines into the offices. But we just didn't know. We thought, well, it's a 35-year-old building, the drain lines. So we had them replaced. And 6 months later, the drain lines started to leak again, and they opened up the ceiling. And the clamps had been eaten away in less than a six-month period. So we knew something terribly was wrong. Something, some chemical was in there, eating these, coming down onto the ceiling tiles and on top of people's desks and injuring people that were in there. So I said, well, you know, we need help. And we really didn't know where to turn, but we always hear the term EPA, Environmental Protection Agency. So I went there first. And when I took a few days to get a call back, and the gentleman there said, well, I'm the only EPA person on the island. You'll have to go to the state. So I started calling people at the state and got referred from place to place to place to place. And I tried to explain to them that, you know, this is a pretty serious issue. Something is wrong. You know, people are have big burns on them. And anyway, months later, finally, we got the state to send someone in and do a report on it, and found, sure enough, that cyanide acid was being poured down the drains, eating through the drain lines, and coming into our office, falling on our ceiling, falling on the desks. And in the reports, the first one we got from them, actually the only one we got from them, showed the cyanide level was 20 times higher than the allowable levels. And this is after the cyanide had been sitting for a while, so we really don't know how high it was, but certainly 20 times higher than the allowable level for something like cyanide, which is, you know, a chemical they use both in jewelry manufacturing and also in execution of prisoners in certain prisons. You know, it certainly put the fear of God in us and a lot of other people.
Now, this report you're talking about, this specifically is the special investigation report from the city and county of Honolulu, as well as you also contacted the state health department hazardous emergency evaluation response and spoke with them, and they came out, and we'll talk about their report. But yeah, you were the one thing that caught my eye is that, and after speaking with you, sparked my interest to see the how failing this just irresponsible on the part of the government. The finding, and the name of the company is Denny Wong Design. This is from the City and County of Honolulu's report. It's dated. It's a special an investigation title is SI-2088, for those of you that want to follow up on this. It was investigated by Chris Sprague and Aaron Smith, employees of the City and County. Now, in their lab results showed a cyanide level of 38 milligrams per liter. The local limit is 1.90 milligrams per liter. Injuries to property management staff and employees of real estate company indicates exposure to the chemicals as hazardous. Recommend Denny Wong Design cease the discharge of the waste into the sewer systems until appropriate protocol and procedure can be established. I offer that because, you know, quite often we don't want to taint or slander any business, any individual. But this is the city and county of Honolulu's records. But even though they concluded this, they state, as Don has just earlier stated, the finding and recommendations, this is the city and county of Honolulu, found that Denny Wong Design to be using cyanide bombing, electroplating, and acid bath washes in manufacturing of jewelry. Staff is unable to provide proper procedure in writing or verbal in the pretreatment and disposal of hazardous waste. Staff admits to dumping cyanide bombing solution down the drain. Recommend interviewing Mr. Wong when he returns to Hawaii. So I offer that. This is a formal document. These are not my words or Don's words, and with great caution, we don't want to maim or slander or imply that this gentleman has done anything wrong, but the government did. But the problem is with this, the government showed up in June.
In June of 2011.
And the problem continued as far as we know, and they returned in September. Did they do, the government, do anything in the in-between to abate this problem other than write this report and provide it to you in September? Did you hear from anyone in the interim?
No, we didn't hear from anybody.
So June, July, August, so 2 months, there was this, they've already established, and they documented from their reports that there was a problem. People were being injured.
That's correct.
And they walk away and stay for 2 months, July, August, September.
Yeah, about a three-month period from the time he started his investigation until the time the report came out.
So all that was being done, he was making phone calls, and the, as far as we know, this continued.
That's correct. And it, you know, it still continues.
Mm-hmm. Now, that was the city and county of Honolulu's report. Now, the state also went there. And as you see now, in the city and county report, it states that they actually were dumping. It was the allegations there were, but the state is confirmed, the city is confirming that they, in their formal report, that they were dumping this down the drain and could not provide adequate description or show how they were doing it. But here's another one. The state health department shows up around the same time, and this is the state health department's inspector who went there, Liz Galvez. A method to clean jewelry was also explained. Cyanide is mixed with water, then hydrogen peroxide is added to clean the jewelry. After using this solution, it is funneled into a container kept under the sink. And we have pictures of that. And, folks, it's just a plastic jug with a rubber or plastic hose running down it from the drain. And anyway, it is funneled into a container kept under the sink. Once the container is full, zinc is added, which binds a cyanide, and the waste is then sent to a refinery called United Metal in the mainland. Now, I raise that question because, as an investigation, they should have asked, well, could we, as Don, you had asked, didn't you ask Ms. Galvez, you asked her regarding this comment that he was shipping it to the mainland. What were your questions and how did she respond to you?
Well, my questions were, are there any documents that show any receipts or any type of paperwork showing that these were ever shipped out, received by any company? And there were no documents. The only thing that they have said is that they have admitted they just took what they got and dumped it down the sanitary sewer lines, which were above our ceiling. But again, they've never provided any documentation to show that they were doing anything in a lawful manner.
Mm-hmm. So, again, with this activity where they acknowledge they're dumping it down the drain, the individual, the owner, now that's what he told the state, that he ships it out.
That's correct.
And he told the city apparently that he was also dumping it.
Which was a conflicting story. One, he was shipping it.
Right.
But then he turns right around and says, no, I'm dumping it down
right.
the drain.
So that was his, I don't know if the city's statements are under oath or sworn statements, but Galvez records that the gentleman told her he ships it out. And they didn't ask for any receipts to see if the hauler was certified or the proper disposal or the proper shipping, number one.
Right, and that's where I went back to Ms. Galvez and said, are there any documents to show any of this, since mm-hmm. we've got conflicting stories on this from the same company?
Mm-hmm. And then so now then he tells the city in their report, they record that they're dumping it down the drain. But in a sworn in interrogatories that was given. It's dated May 29th, 2012. Mr. Wong states that defendant Cosmos further states that in the process of making jewelry, it had to clean the jewelry pieces after they were fabricated by placing the jewelry in a small bowl with hot water, hydrogen peroxide, and sodium cyanide. After the solution foams up, the jewelry is removed. The solution is then poured into a container to which zinc powder is added. When the solution becomes clear, the zinc powder is then separated from the solution. Clorox bleach is then added into the solution, which detoxifies the cyanide ion to cyanate ion. The solution is poured into a neutralizing tank, which contains limestone, then enters the drain. So this is his statement under oath, where he's acknowledging that he sends it down the drain and not shipping it out of state. So I believe that the state and the city and county should immediately take action based on these statements, because, again, he's, as far as I'm concerned, as far as the documents show, it's conflict. It's not consistent with the truth, or the truth is which document is and which statement is the truth. I'm going to go with the statement that he gave under oath in this one interrogatories.
Well, and also we have a letter from his attorney, and it says that please be advised that this firm represents Mr. Wong and Cosmos Jewelries in the above reference litigation. This will serve as written confirmation that Cosmos Jewelry has ceased disposing of any chemicals down the drain at Eaton Square. So on that date, they're saying they're stopping, which to me is saying we're going to stop what we were doing, which was dumping the cyanide and other chemicals down the drain.
And they're not denying it now. And the problem is it's going into the environment and it's situated close. And one of the things one might argue, well, it's going to go, and I don't know which drain it goes into, if it's a sanitary, if it's a sewage, which one goes straight to the ocean or to the treatment plant. But the problem is these materials with acetone and other things that they indicated they were using. In fact, before I go any further, this is a list that was provided by Mr. Denny Wong to people there. And this is an email you gave me, Don. The following list of chemicals was presented to me at 12:30 today by Denny Wong. This is what he is claiming to be using, and some of it, or most of it, or all of it, goes down the drain. Ammonia solution, Batterns flux, borax, gold plating salts, hydrogen peroxide, sodium bisulfate, sodium cyanide, and rhodium sulfate. The question is, and they submitted this to the state, and yet the state didn't prosecute them, didn't take any action. And so that takes us back to the opening of this show. You now, there's at least four people, individuals, that have a legal action pending because they've been injured, some of them on a work injury.
Well, there's actually more than four. Different people have filed lawsuits against Denny Wong, Cosmos Jewelry, based on their injuries. And again, their injuries are pretty severe. When you see some are having a hard time walking anymore, severe burns, psychological issues. It's amazing to see the debilitation of what has happened to some of the people from when they first came there to go to work as independent contractors, as agents, to where they are today. Another thing is, he also has to vent to the outside the fumes and stuff of his process of, manufacturing of jewelry. And manufacturing of jewelry, I mean, it's certainly an allowable thing in the shopping center as long as it's done properly, correctly, by his vent on the roof, which is very close to all the other tenants and owners.
It's in one of the main thoroughfare, main entrance.
Well, it is the main entrance, exactly.
And then it's just maybe 10, 20, 15 feet high.
Yeah, it's, you know, and it's,
maybe that 10, 20 feet, I'll say.
I'd say with it's just within 20 feet of people walking by. And since this all started, we've had approximately 200 pigeons die over this period of time. I mean, if you have 200 pigeons die right by his vent outlet, where people are walking by, where there's a 40-story condo 30 feet away, where the people are walking in to go to the bank, go to the post office, on a daily basis coming by, they're going to the grocery store. It's a big concern. It's not only, you know, it's not only a concern to us as one of the little business guys out there in the world, but to see, you know, how much exposure this is to just the general population, it amazes me that there's so many facts to this thing. And the state, which I thought did a good job on their investigation to find out how serious this problem was, then everything just stopped at that point. And today, of course, the business, the real estate companies just closed down because we really can't have anybody go in there and expose themselves. I know my wife and I, we have to go in there and get documents occasionally just to, you know, as part of the business. And our skin burns and our eyes burn. We try to get in and get out real quick. But it still continues today where the jewelry manufacturer is still up there in operation just working away, and we have no idea if really what's going on. Now, we do know that when this started back in June of 2011 and finally got a report in September of 2011, when we were in court recently as far as the shopping center trying to get their place closed down until we could find out how unhealthy this was, the Denny Wong and Cosmos Jewelry produced a document from the state on how the state wanted them to operate their manufacturing process, and here were their guidelines from September of 2011, and yet we'd never heard, saw anything about this until we were in court, I think the end of April of 2012. So, you know, I mean, the state, it looks like they have told them how they can operate. But the big problem is the state hasn't done anything to help all the injured people, injured wildlife, exposure to people going by, business closed down. I mean, you know, it's all across the board, but it doesn't seem to be helping the general public, and it was only to help the perperpetrator of this problem.
Let me digress one tidbit here. Regarding the pigeons, some estimate 100, 200?
200 is what the people that work on this on site is what they they think they have cleaned up, approximately 200.
Okay. Now, now some of you may, and fair enough to ask the question, well, how do we know it wasn't adjoining a business or an adjoining business that was prescribing or administering pest control, you know, the poison grain and what have you? But what I witnessed was there's a vent, as being described to me, that this is where it would been had been fashioned by the company, and it was allowing these gases to pass out. And what was described to me was that the birds are found on the roof in the immediate vicinity of that area. And if there is more than two or three or four or five, they're not going to all eat grain, let's say, or sit on a perch that's poisoned or whatever and fly back to the same location within feet and die. That's just me and saying that. I don't know the full circumstances, and I can't just conclude that it did kill the birds, but we do know that we had these other problems, and according to the state and the city's records, formal investigation, they acknowledge that there was discharge of gases and what have you, and fluids into the drain. So I'm inclined to believe, and hopefully we can get the pictures or what have you, and we'll post some of this up on carolcox.com, and you can see that. But what it brings me back to this point that I'm always stressing, We have professionals. We have people stepping over one another, struggling to find something to do in the daytime. They get insurance. We send them to training. They get cars to drive around. The families get medical care. And when it's time to arrive at a scene where they're supposed to do their job, they do the job, and someone in the high echelons say, no need to communicate with one another. These reports that they generated seem to be done at the same time. But yet, when I speak to the state, I'm told, well, yes, there were spills, but we, the state, decided to back off because being that they stored it improperly and they dumped it down the drain. Once they dumped it down the drain, yes, we have authority, but we relinquished that authority to the city because it's a city's drain. This is what I was told. Now, well, okay, but shouldn't you return to the city and say, we want to be apprised of what punishment is dealt out? We want to see the permits that were issued, if he had any permits. Is it complying with the permit that the city and county of Honolulu had issued? None of that was addressed. This is one of the worst cases I've seen where they bothered and to go out. Usually they don't put anything in writing. So what this tells me is that the Punahou syndrome came into play. It suggested that someone went to Punahou probably, or the equivalent, or knows a friend up top in the upper echelons, and the whispering factor came in, because they come out and say 38 milligrams per liter found. And this, as you pointed out, later, and cyanide dissipates. It doesn't have a long shelf life, and it gets diluted. So if they found that large of a quantity, as you say, approximately 28 times, and they were sluggish in getting there, imagine if they were timely, what the levels would have been detected. So to walk away and just do nothing and then come back in September and give you a report, I think that the state, I contacted them, and they went back there on Friday. And I'm hoping that as a result that you folk get some relief in that what justice be done here. At least the state and the city and county of Honolulu, and we'll ask the EPA, why is it that they only have one person when there's a major environmental violation such as this to go on, or impacts or consequences? Why aren't they doing something?
Well, I think it's you know, we're so fortunate to have someone like you out here. You know, I'm 65 years old. My wife's 66. You know, I've already been in the office at 7:15 this morning at my primary workplace. We know we don't have another 30 years to recover from this. But if we can just leave anything behind where there's a system in place for the next person or the next company or the next large group of people, that they can go and say, we've got a problem. We need help. We don't have the experience that you have, but we sure need help. And then when they come up with such, you know, damaging results and then nothing happens, we just would if we can just leave that as our legacy, that we've started a process where people can get help in serious environmental concerns like this.
Normally when the state or the city drag their feet and you see what suggests corruption or just downright falling down on the job, the explanation given is, We are concerned about the impacts of business, so we have to tread carefully, walk lightly, and not impact the business. You know, we'll work it out. But this one seems to speak completely different about this, because your business is being impacted in such a fashion that you had to close it, and people are being sickened. Or that's what the allegations are. They file and have medical records, and there's a lawsuit or a legal action. Why then is the state dragging its feet? Because here's one business being impacted, and we only don't know the full impact of this, but yet this business continues to operate. How do they select business over business, or is that a
And it really is hard to understand how this could ever go this far. You know, you would think with all the different agencies that we did, you know, connect with, mm-hmm. both the federal, state, city, and county, fire department, police department, anybody we could possibly think of, and then to allow it to ever get this far. And again, I'm a former city and county employee, so I have, mm-hmm. great respect for all the agencies. But something is definitely wrong here. And if it's happening now, it can happen again. And this, mm-hmm. there's just been too much, you know, too many people hurt, mm-hmm. Too much financial impact. And again, we have no safeguards that the person that started all this won't continue to do it. We're, mm-hmm. just, everybody's scared to death to even go back inside.
And I don't even like to think about what it costs when this could have been prevented if the proper actions had have been taken to abate this. Now you have a legal issue, then you got to fund it, you got to pay it, you lose money. The others' health are impacted, all because, and I don't believe that the state has a magic wand, but I believe that when they arrive there, per their own statements and in their own formal reports, there should have been an action taken immediately.
Well, I think, you know, if this had been a meth lab, and there's some similar chemicals used in this,
mm-hmm.
and then with the gravity of where it's located in the main entrance of a shopping center and with the people, again, if it was a meth lab, they would have closed it in one day.
No, you're not exaggerating, because if it's a meth lab, and my law enforcement training with acetone and the potential for explosions, you don't want to be near it.
Right. And then when there's people up there that don't speak English, and again, you know, I don't want that to be an issue, mm-hmm. but what is their exposure? How is their health being impacted? Mm-hmm. You know, are we using people to work in certain places where they're not using safeguards and, mm-hmm. using chemicals that are toxic? There's a whole lot to this, and once the state knows that, I would certainly have expected the state to, you know, go in, prosecute, and also help everybody that's involved in this thing.
This defies logic, and at a minimum is completely contrary to what the state has been doing, because the people unsuspectingly coming in and patronizing these businesses, eateries, and there's a faux shop, and there's another jewelry shop, and there's a diner, and
the bank, and the post office.
All of that, the post office, and people are walking right by it, and the state went away. All they were concerned with is that he said he was shipping the waste out. But how about going into his business and saying, do you have the proper hood? Do you have the proper filters? Do you have the proper ventilation? Do you have the proper disposal system? No. They went and penciled in. And to make matters worse, I saw that you wrote an email to Liz Galvez and someone wrote, yeah, from you. And where you had asked Liz, you said, Liz, thank you for your email regarding my questions pertaining to your report for Eaton Square Shopping Center. I will follow up with questions are too soon as I am able to volunteer on the board. I am presently at my regular job. So she writes back, could you kindly please provide me with your questions regarding my report in writing rather than having a meeting?
Just didn't seem like they took this too seriously.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I mean, when you have people injured, certainly you call 911 and people respond. We just kind of, we're, mm-hmm. just left hanging out there. Mm-hmm. And again, like I say, we're just the common guys out there. We know what we do, but we don't know environmental things.
Right.
And that's why we turn to the experts for help, for guidance, and to stop what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, Liz is a nice person. I very much respect her as a person. She's working for an institution, and the institution is badly broken, folks. This is the same entity or agency that allow the military recently and ongoing, as I've talked about on the show, where they're allowing contaminated soils with pesticides and all that above environmental action levels instead of taking care and prosecuting the Navy and others and Actus Lindley's. They just went and raised the levels. And by the way, they want you now to come and sit and give comment to the raising of these and allowable. As we've talked before. So, again, I think I'm qualified to say this one is one of the ugliest because there were people involved and there are people still involved. There are people that are sickened, or this is their claim, and they follow legal action. Even though they follow legal action, don't mean that it's facts. But, again, we have to go with what's on the table. And the state, in my opinion, failed and failed miserably. The EPA did the same thing when they tell you that there's only one person in town and they can't get to it. Then what are we supposed to do? Walk around with masks on and breathing apparatus to go get your mail?
It is a hard thing to understand. You mm-hmm. know, we're just, you know, we think we're reasonably well educated. We think we can, you know, I'm a graduate of Hawaii Pacific University. Mm-hmm. You would think I could get to the, not to the source, we already knew where the source was, but to get the help needed in situations like that, you know, it just, it boggles my mind that mm-hmm. this can happen today, mm-hmm. you know.
And I hate to think what the financial implications are. And the AOAO, or the Apartment Association, they too have a legal fight on their hands.
No question. And again, being the president of the board there, I've been involved, and we just never seem to get anywhere with this. And again, you know, this has been going on for about 18 months, and I'm at my wit's end, and I've, you know, on more than one occasion have asked or said that I would really like to go to the media on this mm-hmm. because I need help. Mm-hmm. I need people to know about it and people to know about people like yourself that do get involved and help the common folk out here. And I've been twice told, you know, by attorneys, no, we don't think that's a good idea. And we just think it would better in the long run not to go to the media.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I understand where they're coming from on certain levels,
mm-hmm.
but I think we have to go back to the very start of this thing. And people, animals, any living thing, that has to be the primary concern,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And the city, I didn't bother to call the city and the listeners out there. The reason I didn't do it is because I have a pending request before the city on the Aloha Shoyu and about some concerns we have about their disposing of starches and other things. And I got the hoodwink, the strategies of we need time to consult others to see what it is we can release to you. But my initial request was a respond, we don't have anything. So, again, this isn't just negligence on the part of the city and the state. I believe that when you take into consideration that people were directly impacted, has and is being, and the environment, and you have this behavior, I just cannot know why they would do it. Here's one thing. When asked, this is the city's report, when asked if they destroy the cyanide prior to dumping, the employees did not know and were unable to provide documentation on the proper disposal of waste.
Well, I think any time you talk about cyanide, I think you have to understand you don't have any time to waste.
Mm-hmm.
Cyanide is an almost instant killer mm-hmm. of certain things. Certainly will cause major burns instantly, mm-hmm. and what else it does inside your internal organs, that would be something for some physician, but I couldn't have anybody tell me, we need more time on this. Mm-hmm. We're dealing with cyanide. We're dealing with something that kills people.
Now, in this report, too, Enforcement Administration, Strader Sprague then asked Ms. Ng and the employees about the large quantity of acetone used by the company. The employees state that it is also used for an acid bath to clean the jewelry. However, they only use a little bit and never dispose of it. And then he puts, note, recent purchase of acetones were noted, but no disposal records could be located. So this place, based on the state's and the city's findings and their investigation, they knew that it was wrong, and they walked away.
No question. And no question about it, and even provided documents to them on how to operate their business without giving us even any kind of a notice of it. Whether it's the private business owner, whether it's the president of the shopping center, we got, or even our attorneys, we got nothing.
Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yeah, I got a question. Has anybody contacted the governor's office or this legislature about this situation?
No, we didn't contact the governor's office. We thought by going to the state, city and county, federal, also the fire department, police, we thought we had, you know, gone everywhere we can and notifying our attorneys for the shopping center. You know, you just, again, I think it's a great idea to contact the governor's office, and mm-hmm. we'll continue to do whatever we can to until we get this right for everybody. But no, I think I really appreciate just that thought. I wish I had thought that one myself.
Well, I got an email. So what shopping center is this again?
This is Eaton Square Shopping Center on Hobron Lane in Waikiki.
Okay. Well, I'll email him right now.
All righty. Thank you, caller.
Thank you.
Aloha. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question? Hello? Anyway, this what I will be doing is following up with a complaint with the state and the city and the EPA, because when you have this in this report, it's the most damning thing there is on the part of the city and the state. And I can't believe that they didn't share reports with one another and to just walk away and drop the ball. Good morning, caller. Comment or question?
Yeah, I'm one of the individuals that's actually impacted by this incident.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to call in and just verify a lot of the stuff that's saying is stuff that really happened.
Mm-hmm.
There's other items that, you know, we weren't notified for like a week after it happened that we were just exposed to these harmful substances.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we sought medical care, the medical individuals either looked at us like we were crazy or they didn't understand what we'd been subjected to. So we had a lack of care taking place during this episode as well. And then we had to wait for the inventories to come in to even know what we were actually exposed to, mm-hmm. potentially, when we went in to take care of this incident.
Let me ask you, did the state or the city speak to any of you that were injured, or and did they know that you had received? I see some pictures that some of you were burned, the skin burns from coming in contact with some of the material.
I was never contacted or talked to by anybody from any of the departments at all. The health department should have interviewed me based on the levels of certain chemicals that were found in my blood 30 days after the incident.
Mm-hmm.
If you go online for health departments, there are different per state guidelines, but even for this state guideline, one of the chemicals that showed up in my system, one of the heavy metals, is something that triggers a health department interview, which that never took place.
Mm-hmm.
No interviews from the EPA, no interviews from health departments, none of those individuals at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, 30 days later is when I'm finally being told I'm exposed to a list. I mean, I heard you read off a list of chemicals that he provided,
mm-hmm.
but then there was an inventory done later on that showed a whole bunch of additional chemicals that were found in his shop.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were tested, it was 30 days after the fact. Those chemicals were found as the inventory was done like a month after the fact. So mm-hmm. he knew or should have known that someone was going to come in and inventory him.
Right.
and we should have been given this list of chemicals in the first place, so we would have been sent for immediate medical care instead of 30 days later us finding out, oh, look, you've been exposed to all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we're mentioning cyanide a lot, and cyanide is one of those chemicals, either it kills you or it doesn't. If you live through it, you live. If you don't, you don't. But some of the other things have long-lasting effects in the body.
Mm-hmm.
It can cause neurological damages and different other symptoms to pop up in the body. And these are things we didn't find out until 30 days later. And some of those chemicals clear your body. They have half-lives, you know, as little as 30 days. One of them, I still have it in my system a year later.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you available to speak to the state when they come and do an investigation? Because I'm going to try and beat the bush, and as well, if others contact the governor, I think this is something that can't be delayed or put off any longer.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling. And the others, I hope everybody, and this has been confirmed through your tests and blood tests and all, and
oh, yeah, I had to go through the first round. I believe they took 27 vials of samples from me, and everything came back registering with levels ranging from albium, aluminum, mercury, all these things that would have been found in a jeweler shop. I've had independent medical reports during the process of the workman's comp where they have stated, you know, that those chemicals are potentially used by a jeweler
mm-hmm.
in recollecting the stuff that's not plated in electroplating solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So I have reports that show, you know, from independent doctors that I was exposed to something. I was perfectly fine before this took place, in the sense of, like, my breathing and my lungs.
Mm-hmm.
Had scuba certification, was going for a career that was going to require scuba diving, to now being told you have asthma, you're no longer allowed to go diving. So
mm-hmm.
we have proof of good before, bad after.
And you're now just receiving, what is it, disability or something? Or?
I'm still going through the process. I still have to be considered medically improved enough to be rated on this. So I've had ongoing medical care through the workman comp system for the last year on this.
And what would you have to say to the state and the city and the EPA? Any quick, other than help?
Well, it would have been nice if they would have jumped on the bandwagon, and it would have been, we would have known what we were exposed to right away instead of waiting for a month before someone showed up and said, well, this is a list of the chemicals, here's the pictures. Because if I would have gotten immediate medical care, there's a chance that my lungs wouldn't have been scarred.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the lack of response. I mean, I should have been interviewed by the health department,
mm-hmm.
and not even one single phone call from any of the departments to ask what happened to me, to back up the claim on this individual.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is a little bit of anger on my side for the lack of their slow movement.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to see if we can give them a jump start here, and I hope the listeners out there will rally behind it, at least show, let the government and the governor know. And I thank the caller for recommending that. And thank you, caller.
Yeah.
Okay, take care. Aloha. Anything else, Don?
No, again, I just, you know, want to thank you. I thank that caller that just called in. You know, it says a lot to stick your neck out there and
mm-hmm.
say what's happened to you, but we've got to think beyond ourselves. We've got to think about everybody else.
And as all of us know, that there is this element of retaliation. The people that are impacted and injured are fearful that they'll be retaliated against. And as long as I'm alive, I'll try and make sure that if someone does, we're going to take it back to the state. I think the state needs to own up to this as well as the city. So, Don, thank you. And we'll get together again on this, and we'll update. And there's much, much more we'll talk about, and I'm going to try to get one of the state officials and the city to give me comment.
Thank you, Carol, and I'll make myself available at any time.
All righty. Thank you.
you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show, right here at KWAI Honolulu.